Acute brain injuries from concussive forces have the potential to cause significant long-term cognitive damage if not recognized and diagnosed early. To date, imaging technology such as CT and MRI has limitations regarding the detection of specific types of brain damage. New findings, reported by researchers at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the August 26th issue of the journal Radiology, demonstrate a technology that circumvents this problem. I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Michael Lipton, Associate Director of the Gruss Magnetic Resonance Research Center and Associate Professor in the Departments of Radiology, Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences, and Neuroscience at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How common are concussions?
So concussions, which we consider as being in the spectrum of mild traumatic brain injury, those are really interchangeable terms, are extremely common. If you look at the estimates in the United States, for example, the most recent statistics, which goes back to around 2003-2004 by the CDC, are that there may be as many as 1.3 million people per year that suffer this type of injury. But it's important to keep in mind that this is likely to be a much more common problem because most of the people with this type of injury don't necessarily seek medical care, don't recognize that their symptoms are related to the injury, and therefore don't even make it into these statistics.
What is the mechanism of injury and what pathophysiology can potentially follow?
So mechanism of injury can be extremely variable. Most commonly, these types of injuries in a civilian population are related to automobile accidents, but certainly people can have falls, be involved or the victim of an assault or in an altercation. Sports injuries can lead to concussion, and more recently it's become quite apparent that soldiers serving in combat settings are extremely vulnerable to these types of injuries, typically related to blast, which is, even though it's a different mechanism, can lead to similar pathology as the more common types of civilian concussion or head injury.
Now, are there different degrees of injury, different severities that you would tend to see?
So, traumatic brain injury in general is classified in terms of mild, moderate, and severe. It can be anywhere from someone who is hit on the head and becomes a little bit dazed, confused, dizzy, all the way to someone who actually loses consciousness from everywhere for several seconds up to several minutes. And all of that would be in this concussion or mild traumatic brain injury section of the spectrum.
Now, with regards to detecting this early, what are the types of rehabilitation that are used? What is their efficacy? And is there, in fact, the brain's ability to repair itself?
Well, the good news is that the natural history of people who have concussion or mild traumatic brain injury is that most people will get better over a period of weeks to months. Typically, as many as two-thirds to three-quarters of the patients will get better on their own without any intervention. The problem is that there is clearly a significant minority of patients, a quarter, maybe as many as a third, who will have ongoing problems. Mm-hmm. Now, in that group of patients, the question then becomes, what can you actually do to mitigate or to limit the long-term effects of the injury? And today, there is certainly evidence that interventions such as intensive rehabilitation or cognitive remediation, often these are computer-based approaches that give people training in specific cognitive tasks, can improve the long-term outcome in people with mild head injury or concussion. But it requires a fair amount of investment of time and effort, and these techniques are most effective when they're instituted early.
Now, we tend to see also, for example, sports injuries, hockey players who have not just one concussion but several. And it gets to a point where they're told you just cannot afford to get hit again. Does this imply that concussive injuries have a cumulative damaging effect, that the brain, although it may repair itself, there's still something there that is additive to the process?
Yeah, that's an extremely important point, which is that there is definitely evidence that repetitive head injury is a greater risk for long-term disability than a single event, and in the sense that it's more than just the sum of several individual injuries. So someone being hit on the head once is definitely going to be more vulnerable to persistent, permanent brain damage if they have a second injury, and that's especially so in the near-term period after the first injury. So sports is a great example, combat is another example, where we have people that have repetitive minor head injuries, and whereas any one of those injuries in and of itself might not cause a long-term problem, that the cumulative effect of multiple injuries can actually be much more significant.
Now, if we look at someone who comes into the center and they've had a concussive head injury, what has been noted as some of the limitations of CT and MRI with respect to the pathophysiology you mentioned and anatomical changes that may occur due to the concussions? What was it in the basic science in that knowledge that then led you to look at other means to try to identify these injuries?
Well, the big problem in diagnosis of brain injury in the setting of a concussion, in other words, trying to identify the person who actually has a significant degree of injury, is that there really is no diagnostic test to detect the presence of the injury. So, for example, the typical types of brain injuries, such as a CAT scan or a usual type of structural MRI that might be performed when a patient presents to an emergency department or a clinic, is expected to be normal in these patients. In fact, in some diagnostic criteria, it has to be normal for a patient to fit into this mild traumatic brain injury category. So we look at that and then consider the fact that there is clear evidence that patients have brain dysfunction following these injuries and expect that there must be something wrong with the brain that we're just not able to detect with those methods. So what we've tried to do is to look a bit deeper in a more detailed way at specific aspects of brain structure that might underlie or be able to show us evidence of that injury.
So when you designed your study, what was it that you were employing to try to improve this detection, and how did you design this study?
So the technique that we employed is a type of MRI called diffusion tensor imaging. And the reason that we use this technique is that it is extremely sensitive to the normal organization of white matter in the brain, which is essentially the brain's wiring. And it, by its nature, has a very highly regular organization of nerve fibers and bundles, which when disturbed even slightly is something we can detect with this technique. And the design of the study was aimed to look at patients who had had such a mild head injury, as well as a control group of very similar patients who had not had any injury, and try and detect whether or not, first of all, we could detect any regional differences in the brain white matter structure, which is really the microscopic structure of white matter.
And what were the results that you found?
So we were able to detect differences between these patients at specific locations that we already know from studies of patients with more severe injury are typical locations that are affected in brain injury. So just to put this in context, the mechanism of injury in many ways is very similar in the patients that we're looking at who have these relatively mild injuries to patients who have much more severe brain injury. In the patients with much more severe injury, some of whom may actually die as a result of the accident, there is extensive knowledge of what the normal distribution in the brain or the locations in the brain are that are affected by this type of injury. So what we were able to do then is to look at our mildly injured patients, detect the areas where there were brain abnormalities, and correlate the distribution of abnormalities in the mildly injured patients with what we know about patients with more severe injury. And there's a very close correlation telling us that these abnormalities are likely to be related to the consequence of the trauma.
Now, does this imply as well that, and is this an issue where if you have someone who has a head injury and they go into the emergency room and they do the CT and or the MRI and they find things are normal, is there a danger that patient has just said, okay, you look fine, go ahead, head on home. Here's some precautionary things. You may need some a little bit of rehab. Is that one of the issues that now that there is a means of detecting the injuries, being able to show physically, yes, we've matched this up, we're aware of the anatomy, we know this what is going on, that it allows you now to direct these patients to more specific care to deal with those injuries?
Yes, absolutely. And I should also point out that another essential component of the study was that we looked not just at whether or not we could detect these structural abnormalities in the brain's white matter, but specifically whether they correlated with the patient's cognitive performance. Mm. And that's extremely important because we know that following head injury that there are specific mental functions, particularly one that is referred to as executive function, which are significantly impaired and relate to a lot of the disability and problems that patients have following these injuries. So we were able to show that the abnormalities that we detect with injury are highly correlated with the degree of impairment on these psychological tests. So what that tells us is that if you look at a patient who may come into the emergency room, for example, following an injury, the typical scenario is that they will have these types of routine imaging, like a CAT scan mm-hmm. or an MRI. They'll be evaluated by a physician, and they'll be told that, well, we didn't see anything wrong with your brain. Right. You're okay, and you're going to be fine, given, as you said, some precautionary instructions, and they're on their way. The unfortunate reality is that those patients may or may not be okay in the long run. You know, as we discussed, right. most people will be fine, but there's a significant minority of patients who will definitely have long-term problems. And now perhaps there may be a way to identify those patients and channel them toward more close, intensive follow-up.
The technique that you're using with the MRI, is it a specific type of MRI machine, or is this adaptable to existing systems?
No, the MRI technique that we use is something that can be employed on many MRI scanner systems. It's not unique to the particular machine that we're using. It's not necessarily going to be available in every center, but mm-hmm. it is something that is becoming more widely available. And it's really the combination of having the technique available on your scanner as well as having the ability to look at and analyze the results.
What are the next steps in this research?
Well, the direction that we are looking to move is at trying to assess the long-term predictive value of the technique. So in our study, it's important to recognize that we looked at patients at the time of their injury. But the really most important clinical question is whether we can use that information that we gather from patients at the time of their injury and predict how they're going to do in a relatively long-term follow-up. In other words, what are they going to be like a year out? And again, since most people will get better over time, what we're really interested in determining is to what extent can we predict who are the patients that are at highest risk and use that information both in treatment as well as in evaluating potential new therapies.
This, in effect, almost blossoms when using the device as to make the detection, and subsequent to that, you have all these branches to different areas of knowledge and trying to elucidate and figure out which people are more at risk, what the best treatment would be. It really seems quite exciting to me that you're using a device that, as you mentioned, can be adapted to do this particular technique, and then to really catch those people who may have fallen through the cracks and prevent tremendous morbidity in these individuals.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the key point here is that this information tells us that we may finally have a diagnostic, what we call biomarker, of significant injury in these patients. And it's important to proceed and really validate that so it can be maximally applied both in, you know, in caring for and guiding the care of patients as well as looking forward toward developing new treatments.
Dr. Michael Lipton is Associate Director of the Grus Magnetic Resonance Research Center and Associate Professor in the Departments of Radiology, Psychiatry, and Behavioral Sciences and Neuroscience at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. And Dr. Lipton, I'd like to thank you very much for what I think is really fascinating and how you have been able to look at structures of the brain that have been damaged, but under normal circumstances would have been missed. And in this case, opening up opportunities to help people who may have suffered a brain injury and preventing them from falling through the cracks and giving them the care that they need. And I think that is just absolutely fantastic.
Thank you very much.